Echo.
She's not like anyone else. You wonder why she captured you like a firefly and makes you shine like you never could alone.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the show, Drive Through HR. Brian, William, and I talking to you every day about HR world. And today it's pretty sunny in Dallas, and I hope everybody is doing fine. And I'm so excited to open the show. Two things. Just now, I opened the show today, and another is we have a wonderful guest, Paul Hibbert. Well, I've been following Paul on social media for a while, and he's a sought-after person for recognition and employee branding. So I'm so excited to welcome our guest, Paul Hibbert. How are you doing?
I'm doing just great, Nisha. Thanks so much. It's wonderful to be here. I hope we have thousands and thousands of people paying attention this afternoon at lunch.
Yeah, sure. And it's really a pleasure talking to you today.
Well, I'm excited. This is always fun to connect with you guys on Drive Through.
Yeah, too. So let's start up on what's keeping you up at night.
Well, what's keeping me up at night right now? I don't know if anything's keeping me up so much as I'm just very interested in a couple of things. I think especially from my perspective, you know, I've gone through some things over the last 6 months. I had a company called I2I, which was a consulting firm for about 5 years. And, you know, it's one of those stories that, you know, be careful what you wish for, you might get it. And, you know, for years I was in the incentive and reward space as a, you know, a normal, you know, sales guy for a while. I was internal as a designer. But I always felt like there was more to what we did in the industry, and consulting was kind of the end game. So I started I2I as a consulting practice. And for a while it was great. I enjoyed it. I loved it. I had great clients. But, you know, over time you find that it gets a little bit lonely as a consultant. You don't really have a team of people that you can, you know, connect with and, you know, just talk about what's going on during your day. I mean, every time you get on the phone, you're either talking to a potential client or an existing client. So you're always, quote, unquote, on when you're talking to people. So about a year or so ago, I decided to kind of shut down I2I and started looking for potential people I could work with. And, you know, I think, you know, William, you might find this interesting, and Nisha, that what I did was is I kind of went through my LinkedIn lists of people that I knew, and I said, who would I want to hang around with? And it didn't really matter what industry they were in. I just wanted to connect with people that challenged me intellectually, I had fun with when I was with them, I thought they were, you know, had the value systems that jived up with mine. And I went through a list, and I came out with a short list of about five people. One of them was a guy named Tom Miller, who ran a company called The Miller Company down in Dallas. And I said, you know, I'm going to give Tom a call. He's somebody, and his team are people I could work with and connect with. And so it really had less to do with what he did or what his company did, but just who they were. And we chatted for a while. We worked out a deal where he would buy my company, and we would kind of consolidate everything. So now I'm a proud team member of the company that's called Symbolist, that's S-Y-M-B-O-L-I-S-T, out of Dallas, actually out in Grapevine, right by the airport. So, William, you'll know where that is, being from you're in Fort Worth, right?
I'm in Arlington, but yeah, I know
Arlington, yeah. So anyway, that started in January 1. So I've been working with Symbolist now, and my job there is to work with clients on program design as well as to help evangelize our brand. And, you know, Nisha, when you talk about what keeps me up, what we're focused on now is, and, you know, I feel like I'm rambling a little bit, but, you know, feel free to interrupt me at any point in time. But what we're focused on now is we're seeing that with technology today, and I think a lot of us are feeling this with Twitter, with Facebook, and even LinkedIn to a certain degree, that we've kind of automated all of these, quote-unquote, social tools. So now on LinkedIn, if you post it out to Twitter, it automatically connects to LinkedIn and Facebook. So that interaction on Facebook or LinkedIn is less about me connecting with somebody than it is about different systems and APIs talking to each other. And all of these types of technologies are really kind of, if you think about it, automating what we started out as being very social tasks. You know, you'd have to go into Facebook and post, and you'd have to think about it. And now I can do it from three different platforms. I can do it from my Hootsuite, or I can do it from TweetDeck or whatever. So, and that same thinking is kind of, you know, getting into the whole reward and recognition and what I like to call influence world when we talk about employees and even when we talk about channel programs or consumer programs, that we've kind of just automated a lot of what used to be relationship-based. So even if you think about your own reward systems out there right now, a lot of times you can click on a button, click on a that says rewards, recognize somebody, and then click on a name, and then they even have a button that says suggested copy where you can click on that, and it'll give you suggestions on what to put into that recognition. So in effect, we've taken out any of the decision making that somebody has to go through to recognize somebody. So what we're trying to do is kind of take a step back from that and say, how do I make this more human? I'm not going to get away from using some of these tools, obviously, because it's important to try to streamline, make things efficient, make it easy. But at the same time, how do I now balance that with making it human? So we're really trying to focus in on talking with our clients about what is it about their company that people should want to connect with? What are the personality types of your company? What is your culture? How do you represent that? And then how do I plug that into a system that's efficient but yet still human? Does that make any sense?
It does. It does. And while we're being human, I want to stop down and ask you a personal question, because you did say that you went through a lot in the first couple months, but it would be nice to for those that are listening to, in general, what did go on, and how do you feel now?
Well, I mean, it's interesting you bring it up. You know, a lot of times people don't like to talk about some of the personal things, but I think that I've been pretty, you know, open and forthcoming on this on the web. Actually, heck, I put a website together on it. But, in October I was diagnosed with bladder cancer. And until you hear those words, you don't really understand what that means. And that's fairly life-changing when you hear that you have cancer and that, you know, you've got to go through all this stuff. And I had to go through chemo, and then the chemo didn't work, and then I had to go in for surgery. And I was in the hospital for a week, and then I was sent home, and then I was back the next day because things weren't working, and I had to be readmitted, and it was a real pain. But now everything, you know, God bless and thank everybody, but everything seems to be working well, and it's going forward. And the good news is, from the doctor's point of view anyway, I am what they say cancer-free right now. They checked all the lymph nodes and everything else that was in there, and couldn't find any more. So they got everything out. So I'm just kind of in the recuperation phase a little bit now, doing a little bit of rehab. I'm going to be on the road here real soon, I hope. Just got to, you know, kind of go from that. But it really does change your point of view. I can even use that story a little bit, William and Nisha, to kind of communicate the type of people I'm working with now. Is, you know, I hadn't inked any deals with anybody on my company when I found out I had cancer. And I had called Tom, and I said, look, ethically, I need to let you know what's going on here, because, you know, heck, you know, we started talking about merging these two companies, and you have the right to say no. You know, you didn't sign on for this. And Tom was very matter-of-fact. He just said real quickly on the phone, he goes, you know what, I didn't look at this as a six-month deal. I looked at this as like a six-year deal or more. So as far as I'm concerned, nothing's changed. Now, that's the quality of people I'm dealing with now. So, you know, I was lucky to get through, you know, all of these health issues right now at the beginning of the year. Things are on trending up. I was lucky to connect, and I don't know how much luck has to do with it, but it was great to be able to connect with people like Tom and his team down in Dallas and Symbolist. So I'm just totally psyched, or to use a Steve Brown word, totally geeked to get moving on this, and I'm glad I'm back, and that it's amazing you can go from being on the table for surgery for 10 hours and then be back at your office in less than 30 days working and out walking around the neighborhood and getting ready to travel again. So it's just wild. But appreciate you asking. But everything's just, from a health standpoint, nothing but good stuff right now.
Good. Any revelations or regrets? So when one goes through a life-altering event like this, there's usually about 4 R's that come in, but I'd like to focus on the revelations and regrets. So anything that's kind of come from this event that's kind of informed how you want to be a different human being going forward, or anything about the business, anything in terms of revelations. The other is regrets as you look backwards, you know, on a couple chapters in your book. Is there anything that you'd change?
Well, obviously, yeah. It is mind expanding, and it's an interesting process. And if there was a way I could get people and allow people to experience it without having to actually experience it, kind of a total recall thing maybe. But the biggest thing I learned, and this has a lot to do, I think, with corporate wellness. I hate to bring it back to work, but it kind of does tie into this. When I was in the hospital, I was pretty much, I couldn't do anything. I couldn't get out of bed the first couple of days. I couldn't move, and my wife was there. And I posted on my website, and if anybody wants to go out and read the whole story, it's called pstrong.com, kind of a takeoff on Live Strong. But if you go to pstrong, pstrong.com, that's my website for what I went through, and I still update that on a pretty weekly, kind of a weekly basis. But the point I was going to make is that I laid there in that bed knowing I could not do anything for myself, and my wife had to do it. And the thing I kept coming back to is, if my wife was sick, would I be in good enough shape to take care of her the way she was taking care of me? Say she had some sort of problem that required me to move her around and to pick her up and to take her out of the bed and put her back into bed. Was I in good enough shape to do that? And the answer was really no. And I think if we look, a lot of us look at our lives and what we do every day, are we in good enough shape to take care of other people the way I was being taken care of? And that changed now my point of view on wellness and what I need to do to be in good enough shape to take care of somebody else. And it changes that conversation, William, from what do I need to do to be in good shape to what do I need to do to be in good enough shape for somebody else? And I think that's a huge difference in how we sell wellness in the organizations today, is we always talk about how that affects me personally. And it has less to do with me than it does with my wife and my kids and other things like that. So the big revelation there was just the lack of being selfish in the future. You know, my wife went through that with me, you know, with the surgery. She had to sit downstairs for 10 hours while they were cutting me. I didn't see any of that. I was knocked out. So she's the one that had to deal with that. And she had to deal with me on the next couple of days. Now, could I do that with her? And you know, that's my goal now, is to, I want to be in good enough shape that I could take care of anybody if they needed me to. So that does change, you know, from being very selfish to not being selfish at all, I think. And I think it does affect the way that I approach business now, because I'm going to be worried more about, can I take care of somebody else before, you know, I take care of myself, so to speak. It's a good question, though. I think a lot of people should think about it.
Small modification to what you're saying. She didn't have to take care of you. She chose to take care of you.
Absolutely, and I'm blessed because of it.
Truth. Let's get back to humanizing and data and systems and all the real kind of. I want to ask you the question about data and intuition, where you have people that just trust their gut, trust their intuition, and you have people on the other end of the pole, if you will, that just want data. And MBAs are known for analysis paralysis, if you will. So how do you know when to pull what lever?
You know, in the way we look at it and the way I look at it is I pull both at the same time. And the reason I say that is because there's a good book written, gosh, I want to say about 15, maybe even 20 years ago now, called Competing for the Future. It's an older book, but, man, it had some great lessons in there. And one of the ones that I remember from that book was they were talking about research and how research can be kind of blind. And, you know, they talked about research is kind of like trying to drive looking out your rearview mirror. Because with research, all you can do is understand what has happened. And they tell the story that, you know, they had Chrysler had done a lot of focus groups and a lot of research with their customers about what kind of cars to build. Not once in any of their research did a consumer say, I want a minivan. Never happened, because it didn't exist. Now, the minute they put one out there, the world went nuts, and we all know that, you know, you can't be, you know, a 30-something family without a minivan. That's just, you know, you can't do it. It's against the law, I think, in most states now. But the minivan now became the, you know, transportation option for families, And that never showed up in any research. So when you ask about data, data can only tell you a lot of times is what has happened. And that's good for understanding current situations and what you want to do there. But I think your gut has to be there in order to look toward the future. So, you know, things we try to do is combine both, you know, let's research and see what people are saying about your organization. Let's do that. Let's, you know, let's do the mean, median, mode. Let's look at standard deviations. Let's look at how these questions and do the crosstabs. On the other hand, what are we kind of hearing that our gut says, hey, you know, we should maybe look down this avenue? And I think what a lot of companies are afraid to do is experiment. And that's where I think the gut comes in, is if you can set yourself up for a lot of small experiments that aren't as risky as betting the whole farm, I think that gives you a lot of options in the future because you now can do things that other people can't do. So when you talk about big data, important for what you're currently doing, gut, I think that's really a lot more about what you can do in the future. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's wonderful, great insights, Paul. But let's have a reset, everyone. We are talking to Paul Hebert, Brian, William, and I. Well, coming to you, Drive-Thru HR, your HR number one daily radio show. And let's have a great shout-out to our sponsors, PeopleClues. PeopleClues.com, check them out. Great assessment technology. And, Paul, I have one more question about
sure.
Humanizing the effort. You know, social, it's become, you know, more than a buzzword right now. Social engagement, social mm-hmm. recruiting, or social brand, and whatever. So, now, how can an organization incorporate social media in their employee recognition programs? And if so, how can they humanize that?
Well, I mean, that's a good question because I see anyway almost, I'd say 90% of the platforms out there that a client or a company can buy into today have some social component that allows me as an employee to see who's being recognized, to maybe give it a thumbs up, just like on Facebook, a like, or to be able to comment on it. That's becoming kind of the standard for all recognition and reward systems today, and it's because it works extremely well. When, you know, I mean, can I've done a post in the past about, you know, recognition by definition is social. I mean, can you have recognition if nobody knows about it? It's kind of like a tree falling in the forest. You know, did it make a noise? Well, if nobody knows that you got recognized, were you? So I think the social part of it in the past had to be in real life. So they would bring you into a room. They would, you know, they'd hand you your trophy. They'd talk about what you did or their crystal vase or whatever it was, and they'd talk about it in front of other people. Well, now with, contrary to maybe what Marissa Meyer thinks, we do still have a lot of people that don't work in the office. So how do I recognize them? How do I do telecommuters? How can I do people in Europe when I'm in the United States? And that's where the technology can really enhance that whole social side of the equation. And, you know, most of the systems now have that, have the ability to do that. If they don't, you now have other tools, though, within an organization. Some companies may use Ripple or Work.com. Some people may use Yammer. But if you're smart about the social networks that you have and the way you connect within an organization, you can leverage those outside of even maybe your reward system. And that's some of the things that we talk to our clients about is, all right, what do you have? What is your infrastructure around your reward and recognition system? Do you have that capability? And it is a very, very strong element because in a lot of cases, all people really want is to be validated for being there. In other words, I want to make sure that somebody missed me if I didn't show up. I mean, isn't that what we really just want to know somebody cared enough about me being there and that it meant something. And I can do that without sending them points, without sending them a gift card, without giving them a free lunch or a new parking spot in front of the building. Just by doing that publicly, we get a lot of psychic income from that. So that whole social side of the equation is critical, and it's a good balance for most companies so that they're not pouring a ton of money into the tangible side of things, which I do think as people get accustomed to the, you know, what I call robotic recognition today where I can click on a button, I can pick a, you know, copy that everybody else is still picking and just dump it in there and go, that becomes less valuable because people know, oh, well, it's, you know, they're just clicking a button. It doesn't really matter. Kind of like on Facebook when everybody hits like. It's nice to see, but in the end of the day, I'd rather get a comment. So I think, you know, as we make this robotic recognition happen, people are either going to have to do more about getting the social side of it more authentic and human, which means actually having people do things, or they're just going to spend a lot more money on the tangible side to kind of keep that in balance. So social is critical. I think there's, you know, a million tools out there right now. I can't see anybody not doing it. In the next few years, you know, it'll be one of those things where people go, how did we ever get by without social recognition?
Nice. Paul, we'd be remiss if we didn't go a little bit further down the recognition path. One is two questions for you. One is around the failure points, additional failure points that you see in recognition when people contemplate what they want to build, when they want to build it, for whom they want to build. And then the other side of that is examples of things that really inspire you in recognition, programs or companies that kind of get it or do it right, or just anything you can give the audience that kind of says, okay, here's your failures over here, avoid this stuff, mm-hmm. do it like these people, here's some things to look at, et cetera.
Yeah, I think there's two major, what I would call failure points within recognition and reward today. And the first one is exempting management from playing the game. It seems like many times, especially when we talk with the, you know, HR people about their reward, and I'm using employees in general just because that's where predominantly recognition plays. But this applies whether you're talking channel programs or consumer programs even. But the idea that managers are exempt from the program, and there's two things that happen there. One is managers don't do the recognition because, you know, they have all these, you know, out-of-date thinking, you know, if I recognize them too much, it won't mean anything. You know, they should be happy to get paid. But managers typically are, you know, they're kind of the linchpin in all of these processes. And, you know, even Gallup said, you know, people don't leave companies, they leave managers. So managers feeling like they don't have to play the game is a huge failure point, number one. And a company that's not measuring management participation in a reward program is not going to get out of it what they should. And if you're not checking to make sure managers are giving recognition, are following up on recognition, or part of the program, you're going to fail. The other thing is most managers need to be trained on the proper way to do it. And everybody thinks they know how to do it. It's one of those things where everybody thinks because I get recognized this way and I like it, that's the way it should be for everybody. And it's just not. They have to understand the way to do recognition right. And I don't see enough training. I think a lot of the companies out there that provide recognition and reward systems try to get it. I just don't think they work hard enough to push that into the organization. So training management and then getting managers to play the game are the two big failure points. If I was going to throw in one more, that would just be, you know, kind of limited choice within the reward system so that, you know, you're always giving out cash or you're always giving out one item, you know, the crystal bowl or the, you know, the wooden plaque. I mean, let's be honest here. Let's find the, you know, that's one of the reasons we have the name of our company as Symbolist, is we want to find those symbols that represent the personality of your company so that we can tie those back to the tangible rewards so they mean something. So don't just go with the easy thing. People that are doing it great, I mean, everybody's going to have to take a drink. Now, Zappos does a great job. I mean, they keep people in the loop. If you go out and go out to the Symbolist blog, I did an interview with Jamie Naughton and did a three-part post on what they do from a recognition standpoint. And it's very human. It's very public. You know, Service Anniversary is a good example of a type of program that's getting a lot of bad press lately, and it should. I mean, they're poorly designed typically. They're designed to IRS rules and codes. But the way they do it is very public. What you do is you get a license plate, and it's a different type of license plate for every, you know, milestone that you're with the company, and they hang those from the ceiling. So if you walk into a room, you can see where the expertise is because the license plate tells you that whoever sits underneath that one is a 5-year employee, is a 10-year employee, well, you know, a 3-year employee, whatever it is. So they're doing a good job of making that really, really public. So I hate to say it, but Zappos does a good job. You know, our clients, I think, do a good job just because we're running their program. So, you know, I'm not going to lie. We have clients where we are implementing things like lapel pins where you would think those are out of date today. But in that organization, they wear uniforms, and they have badges that they wear on their uniforms. So lapel pins make sense for that culture in that organization, and we need to look at those kind of things. Nothing's off limits anymore.
Well, that's really interesting. Well, Paul, we have about 5 minutes right now for the show, and let's talk about, you know, where can people reach out to you and how can they connect? So what's your travel plans for this year? And... yeah, we'll take it from there.
Okay, great. Well, I mean, obviously, I'll plug it again. The blog is that I write. I've been writing it for about 6 years. I got over 1,000 posts out there. We combine my Eye to Eye site with the Symbolist site. So if you go to www.symbolist.com. And then our blog is part of that. It's up, you can click on the blog. And I try to get at least a couple, three posts out there every week. We get a pretty good traffic out there. And feel free to subscribe. We'd love to get subscribers out there. We've got a few things planned for the year, with some newsletters and some other activity to get people to check into that. My Twitter account is Incent Intel, which is short for Incentive Intelligence, which was the name of the blog originally because I started it when I worked at a different company, and they didn't want to have a blog because they were afraid of the bad press. So I went ahead and did it kind of under the radar with that name, Incentive Intelligence, but I kind of kept that Incent Intel as my Twitter account. Obviously, I'm on LinkedIn with Paul Hebert, but I check 90% of the time it's through Twitter or the blog itself, so you can always reach me there. Pretty ubiquitous online, unfortunately. And you can go to my health blog, pstrong.com.
Well, that's great. So, well, everyone, please connect with Paul on Twitter at IncentIntel. That is IncentIntel. And this is a great show that we had about recognition and then humanizing the recognition effort that employers must be doing. And more than that, we have got another insights like managers' responsibility of increasing the visibility at the bottom line for increasing engagement and motivation. So by having said that, we are closing the show for today, and I'm so excited to talking to you all tomorrow. So William, Paul, I, and Brian, saying goodbye to you all. Thank you. And stay tuned to our Facebook, Drive to HR, and Twitter, hashtag DTHR. So, thank you all. Bye-bye.
Thank you all. We're out of here.